You're listening to episode 67 of IDRA Class Notes.
This era now is of social computing, and it's a result of some changes in people's expectations of how they communicate with institutions, because technology puts power in the hands of individuals and in the hands of communities rather than just in institutions. Mm-hmm. So we have a responsibility to be responsive and open and in dialogue with our communities where they are and in using the tools that they're using.
Welcome to IDRA's Class Note Podcast. I'm Dr. Bradley Scott. In this podcast series, we explore issues facing education today and strategies for teachers and administrators to better serve all students. We would love to hear your comments about this show. And please let us know what you think about it and raise any questions that you might have. There will be details at the end of this podcast on how to do that. And if you like our show, please help us to spread the word and tell at least three others, or leave a review for us on iTunes. Our website at idra.org is a place where you can also sign up to receive free email alerts, and we'll be happy to let you know when a new Class Note episode is available. You can also sign up for our two free e-newsletters, Graduation for All and IDRA News. Our topic today is using social media to build better schools, and I am really delighted to have with us both Laurie Posner and Christy Goodman. Let me tell you a little bit about each of them. Laurie has made a career commitment to designing, developing, and leading initiatives that address social and economic inequities. Her work spans research, policy, and practice, and she is passionate about community-based problem solving. So I'm really delighted to have her here. She has served as an editor for the International Journal of Community Informatics, was a member of Leadership Texas in 2008, and a National Urban Fellow. She earned a master's degree in public administration from the School of Public Affairs at Baruch College, City University of New York. Laurie provides a lot of support, particularly to projects in the office of the IDRA President and CEO, focusing particularly on community-based strategies and partnerships to strengthen neighborhood public schools. We also have with us IDRA's Communication Manager, Christy Goodman, and she designs and implements communication strategies and coordinates material development, media relations, the IDRA website, and this podcast series. Previously, Christy worked with two nonprofit interreligious organizations on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., where she served as associate editor of a magazine and led media training for staff. She has a bachelor's degree in advertising and minors in sociology and art from Texas Tech University. She is also accredited in public relations. I just want to say hello to both of you and really thank you for being here, because this is a topic that is important to me for a number of reasons as the director of the Equity Assistance Center. How are you both doing today?
Great. Thanks,
thank
Bradley.
You, Bradley.
Good to have
Thanks.
You here. So let me just tell you what my interest is. As a director of the Equity Assistance Center, I am always and have always been concerned about how we give the greatest access to the various stakeholders in communities to what happens in public schools mm-hmm. that benefits all kids regardless of race, gender, mm-hmm. economics, national origin, mm-hmm. language, etc. And it just occurs to me that there is so much happening in this world, and happening so quickly in this world, around issues of technology and this whole area of social media. And it seems to me that we are at a wonderful point in time when we can actually use social media as a way of giving access to students and families around important educational issues and concerns mm-hmm. that are happening mm-hmm. in communities and schools, keep them informed about these kinds of things, hear their voice around these kinds of issues and what they have to say about them, as well as provide them different platforms for ensuring that they stay engaged in what is happening in school and that their children are benefiting from quality schools. So that's why I've dragged you two here today to really have a very brief conversation and begin to whet our thinking as administrators and teachers about how we could use this growing field of social media as a way of building better schools, providing greater access to kids and families, and ensuring that they can experience graduation at higher rates, success in school at higher rates, preparation for college and for life in higher rates than we're currently seeing across this region and this nation. So that's what I want to have a quick conversation around. And let me just throw out this question as a starting point. Talk to me and to us about, when we talk about social media, just what are we talking about in 2010, right now?
You know, we've really gone through a social transformation, and we're in the midst of that now. Nobody knows what it's going to look like a few years from now. There's new technologies coming out every week, new tools coming out every week. There are hundreds of social media tools, and nobody can really stay 100% on top of it. So I would first say, don't try to. You can do that full time, you know. But this era now is of social computing, and it's a result of some changes in people's expectations of how they communicate with institutions, because it puts technology, puts power in the hands of individuals and in the hands of communities rather than just in institutions. So we have a responsibility to be responsive and open and in dialogue with our communities where they are and in using the tools that they're using. So social media includes blogging platforms, storytelling, tools that we've seen students use to develop their literacy skills has been a very positive result. We've seen it at IDRA, and I know others have as well. But for schools, that's also another good tool. I know of some principals who are using blogging to communicate with families and people in the community. Then there are instant messaging kinds of tools, quick notification kinds of things, like Twitter is probably the most prominent right now. There are others as well. There are some that are used internally among employees. Twitter is an open platform, but there are others that can be used internally that are very powerful. And then there's the social networking platforms. Facebook, of course, is the most obvious. And Facebook is growing tremendously. There's 400 million users.
My goodness.
And that's up from 300 million just 5 months ago. I mean, it's just tremendous. But one of the key points is that we want to be where people are. And for example, I've just, there's a new study that was released, and I can add a link to that in the show notes.
Thank you, Christy.
Where 61% of educators who were surveyed already belong to one or more social networking sites. It may not be for work, it may be for work, but they are there. And Facebook, of course, has the highest membership. So that's where people are, and they're expecting dialogue, and we need to not be silent.
Lori, what would you add to that?
Well, a couple of the sort of markers of this transformation that Christy has been describing that I would mention and just add are that a very short time ago, what could only be done in a conference center setting can now be done at a desktop. So that's one of the really exciting kinds of changes, is that a person who is sitting at their computer or who has access to a computer through, let's say, a community center or a school, can, just using that center, that technology, desktop, phone line, speakers, to be able to create, in essence, a kind of portal of access point of information, both that they can share and exchange with other people, where they can engage in working on collaborative efforts like improving public schools. Another marker that I would mention, and kind of seeing this as a real transformation, a kind of social transformation and a key moment that we're in, is I was at a lecture the other night at Trinity University, where Thomas Friedman, the New York Times journalist, was saying that, you know a revolution when people need to change the way that they do business fundamentally, or their organization will actually not survive. It won't continue unless they make that change as well. And that's the kind of moment we're seeing ourselves in, too, is that all of us who are either in nonprofit organizations, in government, in the private sector, really are looking at ways to fundamentally change the way that we've been doing things, not the purposes and not the aims, but the kind of way that we carry out our day-to-day work in order to make the most of this opportunity. So that's kind of part of the signs that I see.
Great. Oh, so there are two big questions I want to ask, and our time is just really flying along. But the two questions are these. I'll put them both out, and then I want us to handle each one of them, and I'll kind of stop you when I feel I need to in order to get to the second. But the first question is this. What would be the downside of using some of these social media tools? Principals and teachers using these tools as a way to communicate, stay better connected to families and parents and community folks, and using them for educational purposes in the classroom, but as a communicative device. Mm-hmm. What would be some of the downsides in using some of these tools?
I know that some people have security concerns, although IT professionals are very good at setting up firewalls to help with that. Mm-hmm. It's also very important, even if you're not using the tools actively, to be monitoring what's there, because organizations, schools are at risk if they don't know what's happening online about them. Mm-hmm. A scenario, a student gets mad at a teacher and sets up a Facebook page criticizing that teacher. Well, folks in the school need to know that that's happening, whether or not the criticism is accurate or not. But you need to know that that's happening. So it's important to be out there monitoring it. And, you know, you need to be open for negative comments. It's really important not to be afraid of that. People may, you know, they may not like the new bond proposal, for example. Mm-hmm. And that's there anyway, whether they're on social media or not. But not to shy away from those conversations. It's actually a great opportunity to have that dialogue.
And be more expansive in that.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. To give the rationale, say, for the bond. You know, what's going on? How did we spend the money last time? And to engage in conversation about that, which will strengthen the purposes anyway.
Laurie, are there any concerns in terms of digital divide issues around particularly for poor parents, communities that don't have a lot of access, or maybe even a library where they could access some of these technologies? Are there any of those concerns?
That's a really key point, and I think that we absolutely have to be mindful in taking up any kind of form of communication that it's inclusive. And, you know, we know, for instance, Bradley, that around 60% of Americans are now able to use broadband. But broadband, even with that higher percentage and the growing rate of use of internet and broadband, that still leaves a huge number of people
out
in terms of that kind of high-speed access. And why is broadband important? Well, when you think about it in terms of an analogy to radio, low-frequency radio allows for Morse code. Higher-frequency radio allows for the transmission of speech. Higher access allows for music. We want to make sure that everybody has access to the kinds of the full range of things that are going on in the internet if we're using web-based technologies, mm-hmm, or social media as a center point of our communication that engages community, families, and schools. So I think digital divide is something that has been looked at in terms of sort of in a traditional way, looking at things like hardware access.
Absolutely.
And software access.
Mm-hmm.
We really need to go beyond that now and look at issues like usability, knowledge of how to use these tools. Mm-hmm. So we're both making sure through, for example, the Community Technology Center Network,
right,
and other kinds of community-based programs that make sure that hardware and software is available, that we're also ensuring that people know how to use the tools and that they have a voice,
mm-hmm,
that the voice isn't coming just one way from one person, but that it's a voice that truly is of people that are all our stakeholders in improving schools.
Absolutely. And, of course, you both know that I'm very much interested in leveling the playing, mm-hmm, field, the, mm-hmm, engagement field,
mm-hmm,
so that parents and teachers and administrators talk as equals or interact, communicate,
right,
as equals among,
right,
equals,
right,
as opposed to what traditionally may have been the case where schools are talking at families, at parents, and,
exactly,
and that sort of thing. Let me, yes,
well, Kristen. I was just going to add, a lot of access that people have is more and more mobile. It's on their phones. They may not have a desktop computer,
uh-huh,
but they can still communicate with you through their cell phones and the internet access that's there. However, I know that sometimes when I visit a school, my access is blocked. I'm there to volunteer to support the kids, and I need to access the internet to look up something.
Maybe because of firewalls
for that activity,
and so forth?
Yeah, because of the firewalls.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I know of one district that recently opened those firewalls for their staff, so it's only blocked for students. But those policies and procedures are really important so that your family volunteers, for example, at the school,
mm-hmm,
have access to those tools as well.
Yeah, and that's a really excellent point that Christy's raising, because we see that some of the traditional gaps that exist in terms of accessing the internet by using computers actually do break down more when you include mobile access,
right,
into the mix.
Mm-hmm.
So among African Americans and Anglos who use the internet, there's more mobile use in the African American community. That sometimes can narrow and break down some of that barrier,
right,
that exists between,
mm-hmm,
traditional access through a computer.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that in terms of accessing social media, that we're really looking to make sure that voices, diverse voices are engaged. And so traditionally, in terms of civic engagement, if we're looking at things like, does a person send a message to a public official? Does a person contribute to a political campaign? Those markers of civic engagement, they're pretty similar in online and in-person interactions. So they reflect the socioeconomic trends in the society. But we do see a shift in terms of social networking sites where the demographics have changed. There are a lot of younger people, for instance, who are using social networking to interact around political issues and civic engagement. That does really indicate that we see a trend shift there. And I think that holds a lot of promise around using social networking for civic engagement.
Let me just carry this up forward. We have a couple of minutes. But the question is this. What should administrators and teachers, educators, what should they be doing to use social media as a tool for better connecting with community, with families around educational issues and concerns? What are some things that come to your mind very quickly?
There are some easy tools to begin with that are free and easy to learn to use, like Twitter, for example, to use that as a communication tool to disseminate information about what's happening at the school and to ask questions and engage in dialogue, to provide resources. That's a very easy tool to use. And you can use it from your phone, you can use it from the computer, whatever. The key point I would make, though, is to look for where those people are. So there are networks of educators online, very active, to go where they are, to go where parents are, to find out what, you know, if they have some Facebook group, or you may set up a Facebook group for the parents of your classroom, for example. And if that's where they are, then that's where you need to be, too.
And
you want to actively look for those instead of just sit back at your desk, send out a message once a month, and wonder why nothing's happening.
Sure.
It takes more deliberate action.
And Laurie, let me give you the last word.
Well, I would say bringing together two ideas, one being purposive and the other allowing it to be organic. So, we all know, when you go to a conference and sometimes the formal program at the conference, that program writ large is not really where the conference is happening. It might be happening in the interactions that you're having between sessions and the people you meet and connect with. And we've all had that experience. And I think so. You want to be purposive in that as a school or as a community that's looking to make change in support of a school or families that are looking to strengthen the quality of schools, you both have an aim that is not simply social, it's not only social, but at the same time, you want to have it breathe life and be a live conversation because that's really where the power of these relationships come into play. So I would say balancing those two things is really important.
Absolutely. I want to thank you both. I'm going to right now invite you back. I think we need to have more of a conversation around this, just so we can ensure that we're helping educators to think in very creative and expansive ways about how we can use these technologies, these tools, for being more connected to families and engaged with families and allow them to be engaged with us in support of their children's success in school. Thank you both for being here.
Thanks so much.
Well, this is Bradley Scott, and I sure want to thank you for joining us today in our podcast series. Don't forget that we would love to hear from you. We would love to hear any feedback you may have, any comments you might want to make. We would love any questions that you might have. And so please feel free to visit us through iTunes and at our website, idra.org. Don't forget to check out our e-newsletters, not only Graduation for All, but the IDRA News. And by all means, continue to take care of yourselves. I am convinced that when we take care of ourselves, we are better able to take care of kids and families. I'm signing off until the next time.
Thank you for listening to IDRA Class Notes. For more information on IDRA and other Class Notes topics, go to www.idra.org. You can also send us your thoughts by email to podcast@idra.org or fill out the form on our podcast webpage at www.idra.org/podcasts.